Blog Talk Radio.
Where your money's at, your money's right here. Mr. Lee and Mr. Randall make it so clear. So get ready for the money powwow. Right here, for Money Matters Now. Where your money's at, your money's right here. Mr. Lee and Mr. Randall make it so clear. So get ready for the money powwow. Right here, for Money Matters Now. Get money. Get money.
Welcome. You are tuned into Money Matters Now right here on WBCN Radio. Visit us online at WBCNTV.com. I'm Benny Randall Jr., and we got Mr. Lee. He's back from traveling the world and doing the things that he do. Mr. Lee, how you feeling, brother?
I'm feeling good, man. Brand new network, boy. I'm ready now.
Not a game.
We get the money right. We get the money right.
Where your money at? Where your money at? We don't want to know where your money at. Talk to us, Mr. Lee. What's going on?
Considering that we're on a brand new network, I'm going to say that and give it a big shout out.
WBCN Radio.
I'm like, you know, I've been waiting to do that for years because, you know, not that I want to be a radio.
You know, I got some help for you, Mr. Lee. I could drop it like this.
You are listening to WBCN Radio. Bashani Communications Network Worldwide.
Yeah, it's not a game. We got stuff just ready now.
Oh yeah. You know, I was paying attention to that Cash for Clunkers.
Uh-huh.
And I want you and the listeners to correct me if I'm wrong. The Cash for Clunkers was basically for the American car makers to try and put themselves out of the red and into the black, mm-hmm. trying to, you know, get from behind. So what puzzles me is that why were the foreign car companies that weren't in trouble allowed to participate? Now, hear me out.
They had the most efficient cars.
Now, the Cash for Clunkers was to give American people the incentive to go out and buy American cars to bail out their industry. This is an American industry. Now, Toyota, Honda, Nissan, you know, Mercedes-Benz, BMW are really not hurting as at all. The only problem is just that people can't afford the cars because they're losing their jobs, so now they can't afford to buy a new car.
Mm-hmm.
But the American automaker, nobody was buying the car, period. If they had a job or not, they're not buying the car. So, you know, this right here was supposed to get the American automakers to go out and buy, to go out and make, you know, cars that are competitive to their foreign counterparts, to come out with a better American car, to get rid of that stigma, big gas guzzling piece of garbage.
Okay, yeah, and before we get into that, you do have a caller at 917-349. You are on Money Matters Now with Mr. Lee and Mr. Randall. Who's calling?
Hey guys, it's Todd McKnight. How you
hey,
doing?
Hey, Mr. Todd, how's it going?
Hey, Todd, how you doing?
Doing well.
Hold on. Welcome to WBCN Radio.
Indeed. But, to answer your question, Mr. Lee, I think it goes down like this. They simply didn't have the efficient cars was not being made by American automakers.
Yeah,
but since the efficient
cars
was not being made by them, you know, that the whole concept of it
but
was to
part of their reconstruction of their bankruptcy protection was that they were supposed to come out with better fuel efficient cars. Now, if you really look at, because the program Cash for Clunkers is, it's over.
Okay.
Only
yeah, it's
one
over
of
they,
the
they
big,
ran out of
no,
money.
No, no, no. Right, but it was only supposed to last until the money ran out. And that was supposed to stimulate people to go out and buy Chrysler, Ford, and Chevy. Now, if they already cannot compete with Toyota, Nissan, Datsun, Mazda, why would you put them in there?
Ford did pretty well, Chris. I don't know if you know that. Ford's numbers were up big.
No, Ford did well. Chevy and Chrysler just bottled out. But the ones who profit from that was Toyota and Honda.
Honda makes cars here in America, though, Chris.
Yeah, but see, the whole concept, Mr. Lee, was that you would trade your clunker in for something that's more efficient. Well, there wasn't a whole lot of efficient cars being made by the American companies, although they had some. It just wasn't a lot. So the
I have a neighbor.
Went to, the whole point was to get the raggedy cars off the road.
The whole point was to actually get the American automakers to start making quality cars to compete with their competitors.
Okay,
now,
yeah, I'll go with that.
My thing is, if the, you know, I'm looking at it from a point where it's like, if I can't compete with you and the government's going to put up a program that's going to make life easier, which is going to pretty much get people to come to my dealerships that have closed. I don't know of any Toyota or Honda or any other Mercedes-Benz dealership that closed on a mass scale. Matter of fact, I think that they're flourishing. I think that they're buying up the places that Chrysler and GM used to be. And if I couldn't compete with them when I was making the big gas guzzler, how in the world am I going to compete with them in this program? I have a neighbor across the street who pretty much had American cars since I known him. He had a Blazer. He went to Chevy, the same place where he got it, and tried to trade in his clunker for cash. They wouldn't do it. The only places that would do it was either, I think he has a Camry now, a Toyota. And he was like saying that none of the American automakers would take his car. And I'm like, and I was just sitting here like, well, yeah, but this program.
Would you
want to
buy back your junk? Would you want to buy back your junk?
No, well, once you put it in there, it's gone.
Yeah, basically.
It's gone. That's some scrap metal.
Exactly. So you wouldn't want to buy back your junk, so you can't assume somebody else is going to want to buy the junk either.
But the point is, the program was designed for you to buy the junk and get the money from the government, but a lot of the American dealerships was telling me that they wasn't getting their money because it was clogged up in backlog paperwork, so on and so forth. So they had all of these clunkers sitting around with no cash, but yet they even got rid of all their new cars.
Yeah, but they did say the people get paid, Mr. Lee. You got to be open to that. You can't just think you're going to get that many. They didn't expect it to be this successful in the first place. So you got to get.
How could it have not failed? I mean, how could it have failed? Cash for Clunkers. I'm giving you $4,000 for your car, regardless. What, you know, as long as it can drive in, you're getting a $4,000 credit.
Exactly, but
it's pretty interesting. But you know, I also
money.
Find it strange that you know the Japanese automakers really wasn't in trouble, and I do believe Mercedes-Benz and BMW are now coming out with diesel cars. And you know, it's like saying, you know, why? What it is? I'm angry that the American automakers didn't prepare themselves for this, because if the Europeans, who are known for high-end, fast, you know, cars that have big engines, are not hurting, and they say, okay, people want fuel-efficient cars, we'll go back to diesel. Because if you look at a lot of the BMWs and Mercedes-Benz now, they're coming out with diesel models. They're not changing the cars, they're just changing the engine.
Makes a lot of sense.
It sure does, but and my thing is, you know, to me, the best diesel engines are American-made. Detroit, Cummins, Cat.
Well, I can't say much.
I just found that strange that, you know, GM has been on top of the world for so long, and they are so big that they cannot actually get their business together. But let's get down to talk about some money. Mr. McKnight, how are you doing today?
Doing great. Doing great.
I have been going over that information that you sent me, and I've been circulating through a few other investment companies that I am affiliated with, and I must say you actually have something there that is really something that people should really look forward to. So I'm going to give you the opportunity to remind the listeners who, since we're on a new network, you know, we're getting new listeners now, to give them a little insight of exactly what I'm talking about.
Absolutely, yeah. When originally, I think we spoke at around, what, 27 cents or 30 cents a share. Do you remember exactly what it was? Somewhere around there for Manus Petroleum. The ticker is MNAP, Mary Nancy Apple Paul. And it's a company that I work with and work for. And I'm pretty excited about the progress they've made. The stock is now up to 65 cents today, up 3% today. And getting real close on a well. Looks like things are going well. They almost hit their target depth in the recent well. And they've been making progress across the board in some of their projects just with financing and partnerships and different things. So it's looking to be really exciting.
So, people, you heard that first on Money Matters Now on WBCN. I'm just getting the thrill saying that right now. So just excuse me this week, you know. I'm just enjoying this.
And make sure y'all visit us and become one of our friends, too, at WBCNTV.com. That's where you can learn about Mr. Lee and Mr. Randall and all other shows. And later tonight at the 8 o'clock hour, we got Mr. Everything Politics with Mr. Dennis Speed. And y'all know how he get down. Well, he's joined the family, and he's got his own show. So it's getting real ugly over here. If y'all know how he get down, it's going to be ugly. And the Benny Randall Show at 9 o'clock to 10. And for the late people at night, we got a show called Let's Make Love. All right, Mr. Lee, go ahead. That's
yours,
just
like
for the ladies,
you,
right?
Yeah, okay. You know, because you kind of said that like you mean it.
Yeah, I mean it, brother. You know, that's just for the ladies. Although everybody can listen, it's really for the ladies.
Thank you, Barry White Prize.
Yeah, there it is.
Now, one of the things that I'm still hearing but I'm not seeing, even though I'm quite sure Todd will probably say something different, is that they're saying that the economy is getting strong. I do believe that the market is getting strong. You know, people are going back into the market. People are starting to invest money. But I still don't see it in – even though they're saying real estate is up, and I'm really trying to find out where it's up because – right now, I am having a real hard time trying to release properties that a colleague of mine who doesn't have the time, matter of fact, a mutual friend of ours who's been on this show a few times, who's extremely busy, especially with his newborn, Mr. David Feldman, who's been on the show a few times. I'm working with him on actually trying to relieve him of a few of his properties. And we're really having a hard time getting people to actually buy a property. And it's probably because there's so much to choose from out on the market that, you know, I'm still waiting for this, like, turn in the real estate market to hit. So, and I'm quite sure that there's a lot of people out there who are also stuck with their properties because, you know, the value of it is a lot lower than the loan amount, even with a modification. The only thing they're doing is they're spreading out your payments, you know, and they're adding on years to your payment, which is okay because now you can actually afford the property. But, you know, people, especially people out of Long Island, if they have changed the value of your property, and this is like, you know, something that you all need to know, anywhere where you're paying a lot of county tax based on the value of your home, have your taxes reassessed for your home. Because if they lower the value of your house, you shouldn't be paying taxes for a house that's worth $500,000 if they lowered the value to your house to like $375,000. So get your taxes reassessed. So that's just food for thought, and that's free information. So people, just pay attention. But I have yet to see where the real estate market is starting to change. Now, I can see where the market is changing,
but I really don't see where the real estate market is changing. And that's really something that's beneficiary to Main Street because, you know, that's how Main Street makes a lot of its money.
Well, Chris, I'll tell you, I was out at a retail store the other day, and I know a manager of the store pretty closely. I dabbled in some business there over the years, and I had a chance to just connect a little bit, talk about how things were going with the store. It's a major place that does major business, you know, Saks discount outlet down here, and you know, they basically were talking about what they felt about the economy, and you know, the shopping has been about the same, or maybe even getting a little bit slower, they had mentioned recently. But, you know, if you look at the restaurants and the stuff that's going around out there, that seems to be picking up quite a bit. And it's you know, when you look at the end of the day, I said, well, I honestly believe this might be what's happening. People have to live. They have to, you know, they go to work. If the people still have their jobs, they got to get a break. They got to catch a little break from cooking, go out, enjoy the time with the family and, you know, the girlfriend or whatever. And, you know, if they're not paying their mortgages and they're allowed to do that and still stay in their house, they're not paying their credit card bills and they're allowed to do that and still not be thrown in jail, they might as well just spend their cash and enjoy life. You know, and they have, and they might have a lot more of it than they had a year ago when they were trying to hold it all together and not keep the mortgage from going into foreclosure and not keep the credit card and keep the credit score high. But that's what's happening according to the economic numbers, are the foreclosures are still very high. Credit card defaults are still very high. But I guess people reach a point where they got to live, right?
Yeah, I guess it's like they just probably in that whatever mode. They're probably in that really that whatever mode, and I think they're at the point now where it's like it doesn't really matter anymore, which is kind of, you know,
money
sad.
Money always matters.
Yeah, I know. Money always matters, but I really don't – I mean, it gets to – I mean, it's just like earlier when we first started doing this show, and, you know, we were talking about how people were just – getting so frustrated and they saw no way out that they would literally just leave. They would just pack up and walk out their house. And, you know, one of the things that in the past that Barbara and I have done was to literally try and keep people in their homes. And, you know, we would tell them that, you know, you don't have to leave your home. I don't think too many people are leaving their homes, even though I'm still hearing horror stories coming out of the South. And in certain states in the Midwest, you know, where property, where the I would say a lot of population booms happen, states like Florida, states like Georgia, particularly Atlanta, and then Nevada, the Vegas area, you know, those areas were hit hard, and California, all of those luxury properties were like, you know. They, like, lost millions of their property value. And now with all of the wildfires going on, you know, because that also depletes the value of your properties too. So,
tough,
I mean,
times on real estate.
Hmm?
Tough times on real estate.
Yeah, it is. It's really tough times in real estate. And, you know, real estate was how, you know, everyday people could actually make money, even if they're buying or selling or what have you, you know. If you even look at the job market, you know, a lot of people who are looking for a new career were people who were in the mortgage industry because there's, like, really no banks out there. And the banks that are there, they don't really deal with anybody outside. They don't deal with brokers. They don't deal with any loan officer that's not affiliated with their banking establishment. And it's amazing on how many people from that area are just looking for new ways to make money. And it's kind of sad, but, you know, I guess it's sort of like a shakeup, and the system needs to, like, reboot. It's like our financial system caught a serious virus, and now, you know, in order to get your system to work, you have to reboot, but you're going to end up losing a lot of information in the process. But I do feel that more should be done to help Main Street? I mean, it seems like the financial industry is pretty much holding steady, even though I've heard that manufacturing and retail is starting to see some rises. Manufacturing, I don't know where. So I'm going to ask you, Todd, do you see any changes in manufacturing stocks? Any companies that do manufacturing? Is there any?
Yeah, the stock market's been really strong. You know, some of the manufacturers have suffered tremendously in the last year, but you had a broad-based rally in the markets, and the markets look strong. A lot of that might be inflation-driven. You know, there's speculation about that. And what's keeping the market up? What's driving it? You saw gold moving back up towards 1,000 again today. Silver's been holding strong around 14, 15 bucks an ounce, which we talked about quite a bit when it was 10, how it was a nice investment.
You cannot go wrong with silver and gold.
Yeah, we're pretty, you know, based in inflation, I think, in the next 5 years. We're pretty confident you're going to see quite a bit of that. So that's helped, you know, that's helped the stock market, and it makes it real tough to say if it's the manufacturing sector coming back or it's just pure the valuations were too good. People had to get back into quality names, and that the survivors are getting stronger because of that. And the ones that, you know, are not going to make it are not going to make it. And the bankruptcies attorneys are very busy these days, as you know, with the Chryslers and the GMs and all their counterparts that probably followed as a, you know, from the parts makers.
I do believe those attorneys' prices have gone through the ceiling recently.
Well, I hope so.
And I do remember that there was some.
One of the best firms in the city, so.
Oh, yeah, because I remember that there was some in the, there was some attorneys that I knew who had literally stopped accepting new applicants for bankruptcy because that's how bad it's gotten. They had so much work they didn't know what to do, you know, that they could literally turn clients away.
Oh yeah, no, this is one of those environments, and that's on, I don't know if that's on a personal or corporate level. I mostly deal on the corporate level and what I know about bankruptcies, but anyway, it's a pretty good market considering the overall, especially like you said, the financial sector's held up extremely well, with some of the stocks up, you know, 3, 4, and 500% off their bottoms. It's pretty remarkable, and to me, it's kind of tough to believe it's going to be able to hold up for too much longer, but we'll have to wait and see. I'm still holding sturdy in oil and gas and some of the more the metals that we spoke about. I think that stuff has energy, you know, alternative energy as well. I think those have the bigger potential going forward than, you know, the financials, some stuff where there's a lot of risk that's still in the system that has to be worked out.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Also, to kind of like, well, I'm going to say to add to that is that something that Todd and I always talk about, and I'm just literally going to keep saying that for anybody looking to invest in the market, if anybody looking to put your money somewhere, put it in precious metals, gold, silver. You cannot go wrong with that. So anybody who's thinking about going into the market, you know, that's one of, to me, that is the strongest point in the market, is if you go after precious metals, because all that glitters is not gold. If it isn't, then it's silver and platinum, and you need to invest in it. And I will tell people always, if you really want something to put your money in, gold. And even if you actually buy the actual bullion, I would even say no matter where you go with that bullion, it will have value. I really can't stress that enough. And people who are looking to get into real estate, I would basically say if you're looking to get into real estate and you got some money, go into commercial properties. Look for anywhere between 2 to 3 families and more, so at least this way, you know, the property's turning an income. But I personally would shy away from 2 families because if one person doesn't pay their rent, then you're pretty much stuck coming out of your pocket to pay the mortgage and the maintenance on that particular property. So if you get at least a 3 to 4 family and better, than if one person doesn't pay their rent, or if one apartment is not rented, then, you know, you have the other two.
I'm sorry, I have to disagree with that, Mr. Lee. That's the beauty of Money Matters Now. I believe any income is good income. And whether you have a two-family or a three-family, it is still good. This is just my personal opinion. I was just reading some of the things on the Twitter. And,
then go back to reading the things on Twitter.
No, because I have to chime
don't
in here, man. Because it's about the money. Where's the money at? That's the reason why we have Todd on here. That's the reason why we have you. We want to know where that money at. And this is all an opportunity. And I want to thank all the guests that are coming into the chat room, because I've been Twitter and Facebook like crazy. So if you have any questions, just put them in the chat room or hit me back on Facebook or hit me back on Twitter. But, yeah, back to your question, Mr. Lee. I just think that any opportunity is a good opportunity to make money, okay? And if you have a two-family, you're not going to buy a property, right or wrong, that you can't take care of by yourself before you even think about moving somebody in. Is yes or no?
Oh, of course.
Okay, then. So if you're going to get a property, the least could happen is that it's empty for a period of time, but you're able to take care of it. But you're not going to buy a property that you can only maintain on the condition of that you have somebody else in that property, right?
But let's just, okay, I understand what you're saying. And you
I
see,
understand
you know,
what
this
you
is
say,
why
he needs
to go back to reading the Twitter. It's just that you have people that, you have people
I
want
to say what's up to my man, 2B. I see you in the chat room on WBCN Radio. Thanks for the love, brother.
Ooh.
And tell him how it's really going down, 2B, 2B, 2 now. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Okay, okay. Just caught me off guard there, but it's okay.
No,
basically what I'm saying is that you have people who already have a property, and they're hitting hard times. So now if you have tenants that's hitting hard times, then that particular tenant can't pay the rent, he's late, he's this, that, you know, he loses his job, you know, and it's going to take you a while to get him out. And usually what I've been finding out, and, you know, this is why I'm probably going to have Danita pop in one time, because she's going through this a few times, is that, you know, she has tenants in some of the properties that she owns, and Lord knows she owns a lot, is that, you know, when these people lose their jobs, you know, bills still got to get paid.
Right.
So, you know.
But no, the only reason I disagree with you, that's what I was saying, is simply, Mr. Lee, because any money is good money, whether you have a two-family, a three-family. Honestly, I think a single family is probably not the way to go nowadays, because you don't have just in case you lose your old job, you don't have an opportunity to actually make extra money. You see what I'm saying? A single family would be, I can agree with that, but any two, three, four, five family, man, that's an opportunity to make money, yes or no?
It is an opportunity to make money if you have rental income coming in. I do believe what most people do is that they'll buy a two-family and they'll live in a single-family, or they'll live in a portion of the two-family and let the other person pay half the rent. You know, that's fine. But if anything happens to either one of those incomes, then that is a problem. That
okay.
is a problem.
Right. So I guess
even if you lose your job, he's only going to be paying half the rent, but you're going to take his rent money and you're going to try to, you know, live, because you're not going to send that to the bank. The bank don't want half the money. Bank want all the money, especially if you got Wells Fargo. They want all the money. All the money. All the money.
You got that right.
Yes, they want all the money. So, you know, it's totally different. But I that's why I say if you have more than, I would say, two. Because even if you if you're
Mr. Lee, let me ask you this question right quick. There is a lot of people that have been pushed out, like in places like Miami and New York, that have been pushed out to back to renting because they can't even take care of the insurance on their homes or get insurance, you know, because a lot of insurance companies are not doing homes that are close to the water or anything. What do you say to those people, and how do they make that money work for them?
Well, what I'm going to say, if you're renting, all right, if you was a homeowner and now you're renting, then, you know, just bear this in mind. This is temporary. because if you bought a house before, you can buy a house again. You literally got out of the situation because it was draining your finances. Start putting your money away. And just like what Mr. Randall had said about the insurance companies not insuring houses living in a certain area because of flood, you know, I know this has nothing to do with money matters, but I am going to make a statement here. Your health care treats you the exact same way. Because if you get too sick, they dump you.
Well, that's why we
hopefully get a
public
option. I just made a statement for that, and, you know, that's something for Mr. Steen Show to speak about that. But I just had to say that because insurance companies are basically the same. Some insure your house, but if you live, you know, if the insurance company has to pay, there's a problem. Same thing with your health care.
You got to learn how to use the system as well.
Well,
you know,
Todd, give us some insight on how to use the system, because that system's been beating us up for years.
I've been an employer, and you know, I've had some employees come in and say, you know, look, I've got a pre-existing condition. What do I do? And you know, most groups are pretty reasonable. If you have a fairly decent, you know, group of more than three or four, a small business person, you know, they'll usually won't hurt you too badly if there's one person with a pre-existing condition in a group of, let's say, five or ten. So there's ways around that. And there's also health plans that you can join an association. There's a lot of different plans out there. Now, Florida is actually a very good state for this. I remember New York seemed to be a lot more expensive, but you know, I don't know, guys. This is a very tough issue when it comes to the public versus private and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. We basically already do have a public system. I mean, whether people want to admit it or not, the you know, Medicare and Medicaid cover, you know, something like 60% of all medical costs these days. So it's a, you know, that's basically our public system right now. Now, if you talk about how poorly you mentioned earlier the reimbursement system worked on, you know, cash for clunkers, this is a typical example of how unfortunately the government sometimes runs things, and they generally tend to price things and cost things much higher than private sector does. So you got a lot of issues there that are tough to, and you really got to be careful before you get behind an issue to know, you know, the end effect. We really don't know how it's going to be. You know, it really might.
But we got to try something, because the way we're going right now, Todd, it's not getting better; it's getting worse. So
I definitely agree.
Happen.
We need reform. We need reform, and I think that's going
to
come. Yeah, no question about it. I think that's going to come from an effort between, you know, the government, Medicare, Medicaid, the private companies, and they do have to put some sort of effort together to reduce costs with the doctors, the hospitals, everybody. The abuse of the system that goes on every day, all these things have to be looked at with a fine comb, and they have to come up with a system that works better. You know, I'm not out there. This isn't my, you know, area of expertise, guys, so I'm not going to say I have the solution. But I think you have to be very careful. This is a very high worth, you know, part of our.
Go ahead and say it. It's all about the money.
Well, this is going to impact us tremendously. I'll just give
I'll give you a perfect example.
Me as a small business owner, I pay about 16% of my income every year just to cover Social Security. Now, most of that goes towards, you know, the extras in Medicare and Medicaid and all that stuff. Now, that's a lot of money for someone to have to come up with that's paying their own health benefits, number one. And, you know, that stuff adds up, and it'll break you down after a while. So you put in the public's situation, where's the money going to come from to pay for it? You know it's going to come from higher taxes, and that might not be the way right now, especially when people are hurting and trying to hold on to as much as they can of what they earn every month and try to save a little bit, get out of that hole, or expand their business, hire more people. And you don't know if this is going to put out the whole sector of the private sector out of business. And then what do we have? We have a catastrophic, you know, part of our economy just gets destroyed. So
what happens if the private sector stays in business, but the public goes out of business?
The public's not going to go out of business.
You know what I mean? People can barely eat.
Well, I'll put it to you like this, because in actuality, this is really all about money. And one of the things that they're trying to do is they're trying to control, like, if you look at your HMOs, they are the ones who pretty much decide if they're going to pay. So if you get sick, this is all about money. If you get too sick and they're spending too much money because you got the same problem over and over again, then it's a problem. We have to drop you because you're too sick. Or we feel that you should not have this particular treatment because it's going to cost us too much money. But yet, you have to pay X amount, just like somebody like Todd, who has to pay a certain amount of money out of his own pocket to cover his health insurance. So now, if something happened to him, you know, Todd can't pay that monthly premium, then there's a chance that they might drop him now because he's behind on payments. But what happened to all that money that he put into it? And, you know, the pharmaceutical
same thing happened
companies
to all those pension
have,
plans
right,
for the everyday
they
people
have
too.
A lot of power. They have a lot of power. They have a whole lot of power.
There's also
and
a lot of competition, guys.
Right.
So you got to look out there. There's a lot of different plans.
Oh yeah, there's a whole lot of
there's
competition.
There's a lot of ways to protect yourself from that. I mean, you can get a partial plan with somebody for this, a partial plan with somebody for that, and you can get disability if something happens, like you just mentioned, where they cover you. I mean, this stuff all costs money. That's the bottom line.
Right. It all costs money, and they're like, well, where is it coming from?
Hey, Mr. Lee, 2B in the chat room say we heard this tax cuts for business since Reagan. How are they creating jobs when we have had the entire manufacturing base in America gut it like a fish and outsource it? Great cycle of currency occurs in manufacturing-based businesses. You tell him, 2B. He don't understand. You go ahead and answer the man in the chat room.
No, 2B is right because the nail in the coffin is NAFTA. NAFTA was the final nail in the coffin with the North American Free Trade Agreement.
Uh-huh.
Since, I would say, this dates back to Jimmy Carter. It started with deregulation, and that allowed corporate heads to go to take their business overseas. And if you really read into, I'm going to pick on NAFTA because that was the
Do you have your chat room open? Do you see what he says?
Foreign government. I see exactly what he's saying.
Foreign government subsidize. You know what that word is. Health care for their citizens do not have to abide by any environmental or safety regulations either. I can't even say that word, Mr.
No, it's because, you know, it's just like with Mexico. Mexico has no environmental. China has no environmental. And I'm not going to really, like, just really pick on those two countries. But I'm going to say is that, you know, they are some of the most corrupt business practices that, you know, because they're going to let American companies go there and just run rampant. And it's almost impossible for union people to compete with slave labor because these people are getting paid, what? I think in Mexico they're getting paid like $1 a week, a dollar a month, working 12 hours a day, 6 days a week with health benefits.
Let me interject for a second.
Go ahead, Todd.
Our chat friend mentioned about the taxes being lower.
Right.
And low corporate tax.
You see what he wrote in the chat room, Todd?
I don't. I'm not in front of my machine, unfortunately, guys.
Okay,
but
I'll
tell you, the fact is taxes here are still pretty high on corporations, and they've pushed a lot of corporations overseas. I think instead of, you know, trying to get back to the point where we penalize these companies, we have to incentivize them to use more employees in the U.S., do less outsourcing, incentivize them to hire more Americans, to support the colleges and universities and keep the students competitive as compared to the students coming out of India and China, who quite frankly are destroying us in math and science, which are the main manufacturing-based jobs. So where are those jobs going to go? They're going to go where the education is. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that needs to be improved here. And I think if we take a system that incentivizes the corporations to work in-house, to work very closely with the university system in the United States, which is one of the best in the world, and they use these students on a, you know, coming out of school, and they nurture them from school cooperative programs and things that they've been doing. I know they did it at my school, and nurture them into the workforce. They're going to realize, you know what, why pay this guy over in India $10 an hour less when I have a guy right here who's going to be buying my product here in the United States and driving.
But Todd, you know what he says to you? He says, well, he says, foreign governments subsidize health care for the citizens do not have to abide by environmental or safety regulations either. I don't know why I'm tongue-tied. All add cost to the product services produced in America. That gives foreign competitors unfair advantage. What do you say to him?
He's right.
I say he's right.
100%. He's right.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Hold on. Let Todd answer because I know he's directing that right to Todd. So what do you say, Todd? And then, Mr. Lee, you go ahead.
I say he's right. We're never going to be completely on a level playing field with countries that are going to give out tremendous subsidies and countries that don't enforce laws to the point that we do when it comes to the environment. But you know what? We're the number one. We're the leader in the world. We're in economics. We're the leader in the world in technology. Still, I mean, we're still, you know, that might be changing, but we still are producing the most innovation and all that stuff. We need to be the leader in the world in workers' rights, good work environment, good jobs, you know, and the environment and all these things. So we're going to suffer on cost because of that. So the government has to, you know, do their best to incentivize the companies to want to stay in-house, spend a little bit more, maybe have a little more expensive products sometimes. But if it's at the end of the day, it's going to come back to us. I really believe that. If we reinvest it into the education system, if we reinvest into technology here at home, we'll still be the leaders. We'll be able to charge a premium for our products. We'll have better products. Unfortunately, you know, the manufacturing, Detroit, had a guy named Walter Deming come in the 60s, and, you know, actually, I'm sorry, it was in the 50s. You know, after the World War II, when there was reparations in Japan, and they, you know, he went over there because the United States car companies told him, oh, we don't need statistical quality control. You know, what is that? We got our own methods. We invented what line am I talking about? The assembly line. We invented the system on how to make these cars. So statistical quality control, take that to the Japs, and we did. And the Japanese are very good at that now, and they're some of the best manufacturers in the world. And what did they do? They made us look bad 20, 30 years, 40 years down the line.
Amen. And they're producing. You got that right.
So what do we have to do? We can't go out there and try to penalize our corporations for the mistakes they made in the past, like GM made a mistake sending Deming over to Japan. They did. But you know what we got to do now? We got to incentivize them to keep a guy like Deming in there who's innovating and creating manufacturing that creates cheaper, higher quality automobiles and technology in general.
You go, Mr. Lee, because he says thanks to Congress, middle class is going the way of the dinosaur, becoming extinct. Go, Mr. Lee.
Basically, again, he's right. The middle class is being extinct, but. You know, and the reason why the middle class is being extinct, because all of these taxes are going to be paid by the middle class. That means your children and your children's children will is going to pay off this debt. And the jobs will still be going overseas because the United States is not accustomed of giving people here incentive. They're not accustomed to giving corporations incentive. To give you an example, there was a major corporation that said that they're leaving New York. And our governor just said, well, you know, goodbye, but we hope you, you know, come back when things get better. And I'm like, why?
Who's gonna leave and then come back later on?
Right, leave and then come back. Unfortunately, our governor here in New York, he didn't see that. So, you know, I'm really disappointed in the way Congress has handled this crisis because, you know, we have been – here in America, we have been fixed to do business one way, that America is on top of the world and that everybody has to follow us. No, we have to pay attention to what they're doing just so we can stay one step ahead of them, because they're already a step ahead of us. You know, everybody is profiting. Most of these other countries, to me, are profiting from this recession, except America. American companies are leaving America and they're going overseas. All of our technology companies have sent all of those jobs and tech jobs. If something goes wrong with your computer and you call for technical support, it's in another country. You have credit card companies that are doing the same thing. So now all of your personal information is now overseas. And if you pay attention to the news, I think the last major hackers who hacked into, I do believe, got like over a million people's personal credit information, they're all overseas. So, you know, and the laws overseas are totally different from the laws here. And just like what the other guy, Todd, was talking about, you know, people, countries overseas do not have the same rules and regulations that we have. They don't have.
And that's true. Mr.
Right.
Lee, I'm sorry,
they don't have.
I want to answer a phone call. I'm sorry to cut you off. 323-747. You're on Money Matters Now with Mr. Lee, Mr. Randall, and Todd McKnight. How may we help you?
Hey, this is Sean, a.k.a. 2B Enlightened. Hey, fellas.
How you doing,
Sean?
You guys are, you know, blowing up. Like normal there, Mr. Benny, and it's a great show. What I want to ask the guys who are on the show this question, because essentially what we've got here, and the gentleman just spoke on it, there is a great difference in the laws in America and in these countries that we do our trading with, okay? And I just a real simple proposition that the people should go with pitchforks and torches if necessary to their representation. Have Congress modify existing trade laws to ensure reciprocity. They need to create property ownership laws, business corporation laws, intellectual property protections that mirror to the T that of our trading partners. And essentially whatever tariffs that they enact upon our goods that we export to them, we charge a corresponding tariff on the imports that they send to us. For an example, say in Saudi Arabia, you as an American cannot go and buy property in Saudi Arabia.
You can't do it in Japan either.
Right. You can't establish a corporation in Saudi Arabia. You have to have a Saudi national-born citizen as a partner, and they have to have no less than 25% ownership, partnership rights to your corporation.
Wow. I never knew that.
No, he's right. 100, he's right. He hit it right on the nail. And that is something
issue,
that has plagued America for decades.
Here's the issue, guys. With the congressmen and what they're trying to do with tariffs and free trade and all this stuff, it's a very tough issue right now because we have a global economy in transition. Unfortunately, we put ourselves in a situation where not only do we have a lot of their money coming into our system and supporting us, that's a good thing actually, but unfortunately we need it, and without it we'd really be in a crisis. So to go back head to head and butt heads with every other country that we're doing trade with might backfire on us in a major way and cause a calamity, cause a depression. That type of protectionism has historically had tremendously negative effects on our economy. I think the best thing we could do is put our heads down, work really hard, continue to innovate. Hopefully the government will incentivize the companies in the United States to hire more U.S. employees, to take more technology from in-house, from here, not outsource, not send all of our work overseas so it can come back to us as consumers. Because we don't want to be just a consumer nation. We want to be a producer and a consumer.
Now, Mr. Knight, that sounds very good, okay?
Yeah,
but is that reality? No.
Yes, because this whole thing about protectionism, where is that protectionism when what you're doing is making sure that the very same treatment that you're giving me, I'm giving you?
Mm-hmm.
That's all I'm talking about here.
But that makes a lot – but, Todd, let me ask you a question, though. It sounded like what you were saying is, like, you know, if we go against them and tell them they got to do this, then we hurt ourselves. But are you trying to say America is just so deep in debt that there's no turning around? They basically got a America works for the other countries now?
That's not what I'm talking about, you know. But, yes, we do need continued growth. They're consuming our products, too. You know, Coca-Cola does a ton of business in China. and South America. I spent time living in South America. I think we should have free trade with all of South America, except the countries that are going against our interests, like Venezuela, that really want to see us hurt and see us in the dirt. Mm-hmm. I think you got a country like Colombia that wants to do free trade with us, and I've seen it. They've got Pizza Huts over there. They've got TGI Fridays. They're major corporations in U.S. doing a tremendous amount of business in Colombia, and we need to bring them on as a free trade partner. I completely disagree with Chris on the free trade issue. I think free trade is important, and if it's free trade, we're not going to have tariffs from them. They're not going to have tariffs from us. So the more free trade partners we establish, the more we break down these inequalities that our friend is mentioned.
Mr. 2B, do you agree with that?
No, well, the thing is the terminology, the free aspect, there's nothing free about it. Because look what free trade has done to our economy. Mm-hmm. Look at what it's done to us. So where is the free? It's come at a very great cost. To the extent that we're steady shedding 500,000 jobs a month.
Right. Is it not a fact that China owns more in America than America owns of America?
Yeah, well, yeah, they're pushing what? Damn near $900 billion in U.S. Treasury notes that they own?
Mr. Lee?
I do agree with it. I mean, me personally, I am not a fan of free trade. I always talk down about free trade. I'm sorry, Todd, but I do not like free trade.
I think you missed the class in economics, man. It's called comparative.
Go ahead, Todd. Why do you say the free trade is so important versus on what they say? Because I'm with them. I mean, I just think that we've dug ourselves so deep in. It made so much sense when, you know, Warren Buffett and Bill Gates was having the $100 million interview, and he says that they asked Mr. Buffett what he was going to do, and he said that he's going to go to China and buy some of them companies. That way he buy two companies for one, because most of the companies in China own America, so he'll own their company and then own the American company also.
That sounds great in theory, but actually getting it done, because people got to remember, China is still a communist country. They'll let you in, but you have to follow their rules in order to operate, and if you violate those rules, then you could be in some serious consequences. I mean,
well, it seems like everybody got rules in South America. That's what it sounds
like. Listen, guys, if China is buying our debt and they're buying our bonds,
mm-hmm.
isn't that a good thing for our country? Isn't that a sign that one of the emerging economy of the world still doesn't feel confident enough in their own monetary system that they have to dip into ours to back up their yuan? Believe me, if they didn't want to buy our bonds and they didn't want to buy our debt right now, yeah, of course it would be a bad thing for us. We'd be hurting. If we happen to represent something that these guys feel is going to be in the long-term investment quality,
mm-hmm.
investment-grade investments, we want foreign countries to invest in us. We want foreign countries to try to own us. You know,
Todd, that's not what I'm talking about. My problem with China is all of our manufacturing jobs have went there. If they want to buy our bonds and our debt, I don't have a problem with that. That's great. My thing is our jobs going overseas. That means that America doesn't produce anything. America was built on American steel. We don't make our own steel. It's imported in. And it's not, to me personally, as a higher grade as it would have been if it was made here. We have states, and, you know, states like, I would say, Pennsylvania, that was known for their steel manufacturing. Pittsburgh Steelers, you know, it's all, you know, steel.
Absolutely.
It's like non-existent now.
Pennsylvania, absolutely. I know the deal.
Mm-hmm. Well, gentlemen, man, this is excellent show. We only got like 5 minutes left, whether y'all know it or not. Boy, the time went really quicker here. This was a high-powered show.
Yeah, but still, our jobs are still going overseas. I don't have a problem with foreign companies buying debt. I really don't have a problem with that. And I know, Todd, that that's what you're talking about. And you're right. America, over the past generations, have shot themselves in the foot as far as manufacturing. Now, I'm quite sure lawmakers decided, hey, you know, we're going to open up the door to it. We're going to get a little free trade in. Me personally, it backfired, because if it's going to take the jobs out of your country, it's going to take the American companies out of America, then to me, it didn't profit. And you're giving them incentives to go. To me, you know, that's not healthy. And Todd, you are a very conservative person who invests very conservative, and you believe that the old ways work best. When America took care of America, I mean, me personally, our economy was fine. And I do understand about a global market. I do understand that. But I would rather see the jobs stay here. That's my only problem I have with NAFTA, is that companies are running to Mexico, to China, to India, and they're actually, you know, because it's cheap. They're not paying these people health coverage. You know, they don't have to worry about the environment. So pollution is rampant. You know, there's no human rights there as far as for workers. That's why in a lot of these countries, when the workers decide to strike, it gets violent.
Well, Chris, I'll tell you right now, I may come off as super conservative in the ways I do things, but truthfully, that's not the case. I'm more of a pure economist, and I'm more of an opportunist. So
Todd, same here. I am all about the money.
Hear me out, and I'll explain why. Because what I believe is.
And Todd, I want you to do it quick, because we really only got 3 minutes. And Coach TC in the chat room says, "What does it mean when America took care of America?" But we only got 3 minutes, and the show is gone. So let's.
Well, I'll let you take that, Chris. I'll let you take that.
Okay, America took care of America when America did their own manufacturing and they sold to the world. And that's when our dollar was strong. Now that we do not do too much manufacturing, we are basically the consumers of the world. Everything comes into America. If you was to get into importing, exporting, no. It's more like everything in America comes from somewhere else. And we're not making it. We're just buying it.
Dell makes computers here and laptops in America. Let me ask you this. If they didn't have a Chinese microchip in them, how much do you think that Dell computer would cost these days?
Okay.
A single Chinese component, if it was purely made in America.
It would probably cost more.
I don't think it would cost more. It would probably cost 10 times more. So you got to realize that the ability to use technology, manufacturing bases from other countries aside from our own, where labor might be cheaper, allows us to have a better standard of living in the United States, 100% hands down. You eat better food because we import from South America with free trade now. You have better computers. You have a better TV because we can import chips from China, manufacture them here, assemble them here, or have them manufactured over here and shipped here. So there's a big dynamic that happens with this whole
Americans
global economy.
Out of work.
Oh, okay,
now.
Todd, before we go, I just want, man, we only got 1 minute left. We're going to have to continue this next week. Coming up at 8 p.m., we got Dennis Speed with Everything Politics. Coming up at 9 p.m. to 10 p.m., we got It's the Benny Randall Show, and It's the Benny Randall Show. Coming up at 11 o'clock, we got Let's Make Love. That's just for the ladies. So, men, don't come to the show, okay? All right. You are listening to Money Matters Now. I am Benny Randall. Todd, thank you for coming in. Man, this show went so quick when you're having fun, man. We only got
Todd, we're not
left.
Finished with this one, so you got to come back next week. We are not
That's
finished.
The first time I heard Todd just take off his belt and say, come on, let's make it happen. He was ready for a brawl. I ain't never seen Todd go off like that, man. That was good. I like that. Bring that time back.
We're having fun, guys. We're having fun. That's what it's all about.
It's all good. We got 54 seconds. You are listening to Money Matters Now on WBCN Radio. Stay tuned at 8 o'clock for Everything Politics with Mr. Dennis Speed right here on WBCNRadio.com. See you later.
Where your money's at, your money's right here. Mr. Lee and Mr. Randall, make it so clear. So get ready for the money pal. Wow, right here on Money Matters Now. Where your money's at, your money's right here. Mr. Lee and Mr. Randall, make it so clear. So get ready for the money pal. Wow, right here on Money Matters Now. Get money. Get money. Get money. Get money. Get money, get money, get money, get money, yeah.
WBCN Radio, New York.